Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 62, David Hawkins. Man, David is a mega seller. I mean, I know I use that term and probably a little too loose, but I mean, it's just a true story. Who's just so focused, just so intentional. And, you know, we talk about his formal education. He's got an accounting degree and an MBA, but I think he's taken that out and taken advantage of it in the e-commerce world. His approach, very focused, very consistent, and he's fortunate to have a wife that gives him some balance, if there is such a thing, but she keeps him grounded for sure. And we talk about quite a bit of David's background and how he sourced from Hawaii. So let's get into that podcast. Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. And man, I'm excited about tonight's guest because, you know, I've met him a few times personally. I've got to watch his success over the last few years. And I love the fact that it is a family business for him and his wife, and you can see the true love in their eyes, and you can see they still, you know, it's just so exciting to see. Welcome, David Hawkins. Welcome, David.
Hey, Steve. Thank you for having me.
Man, I really appreciate you taking the time. I know you had a busy year, and you've had a busy couple of years. Okay, so what's an accountant like you doing in an e-commerce business? You're an accountant by trade, right?
That is correct. Business degree, even went as far, got the MBA. So I've had the schooling.
So you've had that formal education. You went to business school, and they teach you borrow money, go in the debt, go run other people's companies, squeeze out, grow, blah, 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 blah. They didn't really mention entrepreneur. I have an MBA. They didn't really talk about entrepreneurism in my MBA. It was really running other people's businesses and stuff. How do you make that transition mentally? I mean, was your family entrepreneurs?
Absolutely not.
So you were encouraged to go get a safe degree. I mean, an accounting degree is a safe, you know, that's a steady career. There are, you know, never enough accountants or lawyers, right? So you got that safe degree. How do you make that transition mentally, even?
You make a great point there. Is that I was always kind of raised that it was expected I was going to go to college 4 years and you get a job, you work 30, 40 years for someone else, and then you retire, and then you have time for yourself, right?
Right, 40 years later.
Right.
When you're feeling a little feeble, right? Because now you're 64, 65, right? You're tired,
right.
You know?
Right. But, you know, there'd always been a little entrepreneurial spark in me, and I'd dabbled in online selling even as far back as my early high school days. And it was always, there was always a little bit of a thrill to it about, you know, being able to go into what was then my job, Kmart, and find the hot product, the hot toy that year, and then go online and sell it to someone in California or Australia for 10 times what I paid for it. I mean, it's a thrill that I never really had in my 8 years or so of when I became a real adult working in the outside world.
So how did you know it was the hot toy? I mean, you just watched it starting to fly off the shelf, or did you have an inkling because you were into it?
Well, I mean, that just being in a retail setting, you know, it was kind of had, you'd see a frantic parent come in and looking for something. And, you know, you would just, you know, take those social clues and then you'd run with it.
I think of that Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, right, where he's looking for that robot or whatever it was, right? They get crazy. But, you know, I just wondered if the corporate office kind of gave you guidance in advance saying, hey, we think this is going to be hot this year, and then the store manager shared it with a staff or anything. I didn't know if that happened.
Sadly, Kmart didn't really have that sophistication back in the 90s, and I'm not sure they do today.
Yeah, I guess we shouldn't touch that one because I think they're struggling a little bit. You know, it's interesting, though, to think that retail arbitrage. Now, how long ago was that?
Well, that would have been probably my junior year of high school, so 1998. So quite a
way. Okay, so let's do that math. You accountants and the group, what, 17 years ago?
Yeah.
Okay, so 17 years ago, you were arbitraging from Kmart.
Right.
Right? Before Chris wrote his book.
That is correct.
You were arbitraging, right? Before you knew it was cool. And Kmart must have figured that out and still had not fixed it to today. Because you could still go into Kmart and buy things.
That's right.
And resell them, right?
Kmart.
Isn't that odd? Does that strike you as odd?
When I take the big look at it, because I live that life every day. But when I do sit back and think about that, I can make what is now my living by just going into a retail store, filling up a couple carts, and selling it to people throughout the country. That is odd.
Well, you make more than a living. I mean, you make, you know, if the average household income is 50 or 60 grand, you're making a significant several household income. So, I mean, that's what gets me, is that you're not only just making, you're not scratching out a subsistence lifestyle, right, by any stretch.
I can confirm that, yes.
Yes. So, I mean, that's what gets me. I mean, that's where I can't make the connection. I mean, if you were scraping, I mean, this is really awful to say. A couple weeks ago, me and a couple of buddies went down to the flea market. First time in 2 years I've been to a flea market. Mm-hmm. And I see that lifestyle, and a lot of those people are really scratching on a subsistence lifestyle. I mean, I know they're making a couple hundred dollars a week in cash, and it's cash, and it never gets reported. But, man, it looks like they're getting a couple hundred bucks. You know what I mean? Oh. And I don't mean to sound derogatory to them, but that's different than somebody who's living a pretty, not a lavish lifestyle, but a well above average.
Oh, right.
That's where the disconnect for me is.
And that's, I think, the hardest to explain to, let's say, an outsider, whether it be your family or coworkers, that you're going to leave behind, me personally, a job that was, you know, depending on overtime, what we were working, making 80 to 100,000, leaving that job behind to go to more of an uncertain job of selling stuff online and not always knowing what the next product's going to be that we're going to be selling.
Now, were you married when you made the decision to take the leap?
Yes. I've been married for 8 years to Ivy.
Okay. And now Ivy, was she an entrepreneur at heart?
You know, not her, but her family. Her father had started a business when he was young, and it has grown into a large janitorial company. So that was the one. She'd been around an entrepreneurial lifestyle that I hadn't. So that was a benefit, marrying into that family.
Mm. And more than likely, that's probably a mentor for you, somebody who you could talk to, somebody who gets it. Because as you say, most people can't get it, especially if your parents were college educated and took that safe job and did the 9 to 5 and that kind of thing. And so you probably were able to – he could get it. He could understand some of that stuff.
Exactly. And it's been a great asset to have on my side.
Now, you started sourcing – in a really easy place, right? Abundance, you know, stores every, 10 feet, and you could just drive for 3,000 miles each direction, right? Or did you start on an island?
You got me there, Steve. We were my job had transferred Ivy and I to Hawaii, and this was my real job. And Hawaii is a beautiful place. All the rumors are true. It's awesome. Gorgeous weather every day. But most people also know that it's expensive to live in Hawaii. And even though we were making a good salary, it still felt like we were scraping by.
Yeah, I think that's an example of the extremes, right? It's the extreme, you either have it or you don't, period, right? I mean, and to have it, you have to have a lot,
right
to make it not, because everything's imported there, right? They don't generate anything. I mean, maybe they make straw hats or something, but generally speaking, sure. Everything's brought in.
Everything's coming in from somewhere else.
Wow. All right. When we come back, I want to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about how you start a part-time business, scale it up, and then eventually make the decision. And what was the tipping point? What was that point where you said, okay, we're there, we've made enough? And was it a collective decision, or did you have to push your wife? So we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back. All right.
right, it's early in 2016. You just came off a slamming fourth quarter 2015. You're sitting on a boatload of cash and you're thinking, I want to do something for my business. I want to grow. Start looking at it and foundation. Look at them as building blocks. Build, build, build. Change your categories. Think about gated categories specifically, shoes and clothing. YourSourcedInventory.com, that's what they focus on. You'll get a list every single day of the week, Monday through Friday, and they're going to give you leads for about 10 items that are in the shoes and clothing, and even dipping into the sports and outdoor category, which is great. These are all gated categories. Listen to some of these ranks. In October, the average shoe rank was $7,571 for $29 profit, a return of investment of 88%. December, 11,000 ranking, profit of $32, 83% ROI. Think about that. Profit of $32. What's your average selling price? Imagine what your average selling price would jump to. In clothing, ranking in October, $6,800, profit of $1,488. But listen to this. ROI of 109%. What could you do to get that 109% return? You got to join YourSourcedInventory.com. We use it as foundational in our business. We think you should too. YourSourcedInventory.com. In this segment, we spend quite a bit of time talking about sourcing on the road. And I think, you know, what's really neat about this couple is that they truly are a couple. Imagine finding somebody else who enjoys doing this the same as you do. But I love the way she keeps him kind of in control and, you know, just making sure it doesn't take over your life. As we all know, you can get into a groove, man, and you could just keep going and going, and you don't know when to stop. You go home exhausted. You eat the wrong crap. You don't sleep well. All the junk that we've all been through. She's like, no, I'm finding a place for us to exercise, healthy meals, and David credits his wife very quickly with that. And I just think that that makes it even more enjoyable. And I think that exception, if you can find that, man, this is just meant to be. Travel the U.S. I just love it, love it, love it. Let's get back into the podcast. All right, we're back, and we're talking with David Hawkins. And David is a, you know, I'm still calling you mega seller, buddy. I know your sales, you've adjusted your business for your life, and I love that. But you are a family business. There's three of you riding around in that van, right? your child and your wife. And what's the child's name?
The child's name is Mary Carol. However, she's a bit furry compared to most children. she's a 50-pound labradoodle. So
that's a big child. Yeah. I mean, that's bigger than a toddler. That's like two toddlers.
There you go.
You know, I just love that story. And so you started, though, part-time in selling on the side down in Hawaii. How did you start? I mean, you were working a 9-to-5 or 8-to-5 in the corporate office?
Yeah, we were doing 10-hour days working for an engineering company. So it was, you know, an hour commute each way and 10-hour days. So 12 hours was dumped into my job.
and that was Monday through Friday. Yeah. And then how did you add a part-time business to that?
You know, I'll tell you, the first thing we started selling in Hawaii was, it was the first year iPads came out. So they didn't seem as popular in Hawaii as all the rage was, in the mainland. So we started buying up the iPads and, created an Amazon account since eBay was, back then had a limit of one iPad per seller per week you could sell. It kind of forced my hand to go to this new thing called Amazon that I had only ever bought off, never considered selling before. And you know, we ended up selling 5-10 iPads a week, and it was nice side income. But then the kind of like any hot product, the craze went away. There was no more money in the iPad anymore.
Did you run into frauds and stuff getting bricks back or any of that jazz?
Only one out of about 250 we sold.
Okay. So you know, normally, you know, returns on electronics are very high, but nothing like shoes or anything like that. But it's still, you're going to have some problems. And so one out of 250 is nothing because in the margins that I'm sure that you were getting. So it dried up, though.
That's right.
And was there any logic why it dried up? Did the technology change? Did Apple catch up?
I think that's what it was, that Apple was able to catch up with demand.
I was talking with somebody and you know, they were my advice to them was, you know, don't go deep, you know, go wide. You know, back then you spread out into many different, you know, categories. And I wonder, you know, were you one of those shiny object kind of people, you know, where you jump from this and then you see somebody else doing this and you're, oh, I got to jump over here? Or did you keep your head down and do the work?
Absolutely keeping my head down. And that's one thing. We Hawaii is an isolated place and I didn't know any other sellers. So all I did was, you know, try to think to myself, when I leave this island, what am I going to miss? You know, what can I only get here that I can't get back on the mainland? And that's kind of how we expanded our product selection while we lived there.
It's just so smart, you know, and I see that, you know, I've heard other people say they participate in mommy groups, for example, so they can keep current on what moms want. You know, it's a little hard for me to relate to that, but I get it.
Sure.
And so you're basically saying the same thing. Hey, what did we enjoy about this place that would make us want to kind of relive it?
Yes, exactly.
And you're bringing that to market. Now, in your case, you're not bringing anything to market. You're lazy, you said, right? Uh-oh. You are going to suck off somebody else's listing whenever possible.
That's the beauty of Amazon compared to eBay, is that there's only one listing per product usually. And if you can get it cheaper, or if you can create an FBA offer when, let's say, most sellers in Hawaii are scared to use that service, you're going to set yourself apart and be able to kind of use other people's work to your advantage.
When you were doing FBA, where were you sending your merchandise?
It would go to basically the same fulfillment centers, some in California, but, you know, some in Tennessee.
Okay, so there weren't any in Hawaii specific.
No, there's not, and that's another huge disadvantage for a seller that's maybe based in Hawaii or Alaska, is you don't get to use the Amazon partnered rates with UPS. So you're sending a 50-pound box, and it's going to cost you $60 at least to send it.
Wow.
Right.
So $1.30 a pound, sure. Right, is what you're saying. Incredible, no matter what. And that's just to get it to the warehouse. That's not so it's pretty significant.
That's right.
So you have to build that into that model, or accept lower margins, or understand that there's not a lot of other places you can get chocolate cover and macadamia nuts.
That's right. Right. That's right.
So you have to be more specific. So you're not selling, I mean, I guess you could be if you got it at the right price, but you're not selling Hanes underwear that you bought at Kmart on the island, generally speaking. It's just probably not profitable.
Correct. It would be hard to compete. You know, there's a couple Targets on the island, but, you know, if Target kind of puts the same stuff on clearance at every store nationwide, and if I'm getting something for 50% off at a store in Honolulu, I can't compete with someone doing that in Nebraska or New York or anywhere else. So that basically kind of, you take Target and you take Walmart off your list of sourcing when you live in a place like Hawaii.
So is that a good piece of advice for even people that live in the Midwest, you know, to start thinking differently about that? You know, here I am, Andy and I live close together. Actually, me and a whole bunch of the young guns all live close together. We have the Amish here, for example, right?
Right.
You know, is that the way you should be approaching, you know, if you really want to break out from the herd and break out from others, is to really look locally, because there's a lot more items than you think, correct?
I think every region or city has that one thing that kind of sets them apart, makes them famous. And you can use what strategy I used in Hawaii. You could probably use it where you're saying, or even here in Kansas City.
Right, I was thinking of barbecue sauce, exactly where I was going to go with
and,
you.
And right? We've talked about it 100 times, my wife and I, and it goes back to not like being specialized at putting a good bundle together, but someone that could, you know, mix up some good barbecue spices, rubs, sauces, could probably make a pretty good listing on Amazon.
Yeah, the whole the Kansas City, you know, package. You know, I mean, you could put together, because anybody who's been there, or you know, think of the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, without you know infringing on their license, my son's a Kansas City fan, and he lives over in Maryland.
Oh, sure.
And so you know, those things exist. Are you still sourcing in Hawaii?
I would say yes, and it's basically. It's more by choice rather than forced to do it to make ends meet now. My wife and I are lucky enough for the business to go back to Hawaii at least every year and spend about a month there during the Kansas City winters.
So do you set a goal to pay? I mean, knowing you're an accountant, I know you do. I know exactly you calculate out. I could see it in your mind. I'm going to spend this amount, and she's going to be like, well, I want to buy that. Okay, we got to add 8 more cases, honey. And then – you're down there and you have a list and you're like, okay, we got a little bit more to go, right? Is that you?
Oh, definitely.
Definitely.
I've got to pay for that. Even though it's nice to get away and relax, we have such an amazing opportunity with FBA I can go anywhere in the world probably and find a way to pay for that trip.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it used to be so odd to hear that. You know, I remember a couple of years ago when they were talking about the guy who flew somewhere and then he would source, and it was like, wow, that sounds so exotic.
Right.
Now it's like every day I'm seeing, you know, I've interviewed a couple of people, been on the road for months, you know, or you think of Chris Bond, you know, traveling for sometimes, you know, a week or two. Well, you guys.
Sure.
What's been your longest trip?
We actually just got back from a trip to Florida. The day of Thanksgiving all the way 2 days before Christmas. So almost a whole month we were in the state of Florida, basically looped all around and hit every major city in Florida just sourcing and taking in the nice weather.
And did you just stay in hotels?
Yes, there's some sourcers, you mentioned Chris Bond, that maybe rough it a little more than we will. I've got the wife and the dog, and so it's a hotel every night, and it's shopping during the day, and you know, you take a day or two out for Disney, of course, if you're in Florida, but it's a lifestyle that it's probably foreign to a lot of people, but we really love it.
So you get to see the country and really enjoy yourself. Do you now? I've done a few. I have trouble dieting, because it's very difficult to diet on the road, and exercising. Have you adjusted your lifestyle? Because you guys were pretty healthy people, right? I mean, I've seen that, you know, you run in a race here and there. Have you figured out how to do that on the road?
That is a very hard balance, but that's kind of the benefit of having Ivy with me, because she's kind of our health advisor of the family. So she'll scout out a park, a running trail, and you know, we just kind of we adjust it on our day's map, and you know, go try to put in 3-4 mile run, and then get on with the day.
Because if you were left to your own devices, you just keep sourcing, keep working, then go home tired and say, I'm exhausted, I'm not doing anything, and veg in front of the couch.
I'd go source TV. My 14 hours, be happy and done. Yeah. But it's good to have that a sane balance in my life. So.
Yeah, I think that's a real value that I don't think we should downplay. I think that helps you. I don't believe in balance. I just think it helps you turn it off, because it's got to be hard to turn off, especially when you drive by an unexpected store. You're saying, oh, okay. What's that? Right? I mean, it must happen.
Every location to me is dollar signs. So if, let's say, we happen to be sourcing like Walgreens, and I know I'm averaging a $200 profit every time I go into a Walgreens. If I skip 3 Walgreens that day, then I've just given someone else $600 or cost myself $600. So I end up seeing each store, each location as a value.
Have you broken down your business into segments? Are you that segmented to say, you know, I want to send in, you know, $1,000 worth of merchandise today, or are you doing it on ROI or whatever? I mean, are you that that formal, you know, mentally? I mean, do you actually build a plan?
I would say not on the shipping plans, but definitely, you know, when sourcing. I'm not gonna, you know, take I'm not going to take a road trip, rent a van, or drive one of our smaller vans, have a hotel if we're only making $100, $200. If we're not, you know, making $1,000 profit a day on the road, it's not worth it to us. So I would say we've segmented out the kind of the ROI in the sourcing budget, but not so much with the shipping it in.
Okay, so you bring up a good point. So you're saying, hey, I want to make $1,000 profit a day, or otherwise it's just really not worth my time. I could be doing other things that will make me that $1,000, right?
That's a
choice, right? So you figured out how to make that choice. So tell me how you would approach that. So you're in Kansas City and you decide, hey, we want to go to Tennessee. Are you, you know, is there a driving limit? Is there a flying opportunity? When does it become one or the other?
Well, I would say it doesn't really start with the location. It usually is going to start with the product. So if, let's say, we have a home run product and me and my employees have kind of sourced it out of anywhere we could here in Kansas City, and the easy places to get to would be like Omaha, Des Moines, Wichita, 3 hours away or so. Then you start looking at where else can I get a lot of this product easily. So that's generally how we're going to start planning that trip at that point.
Okay, and so you start planning that trip, and I remember another interview you did with Andy, and you were talking about using mapping software. So when you look at Walgreens, you put all their addresses in, and you find the best route, right? And so you set a goal to hit. Now, if you're going to the Walgreens, you know, in all those places, are you distracted when you pass a Walmart or a Target and say, ooh, I'm giving up, you know, X number of profit there? Or do you just stay to your path and just hit all the Walgreens because that was your plan?
We always set out with the goal of sticking to, let's say it's a Walgreens plan, but we're flexible. And it seems to be usually the most profitable item on a trip ends up being an unexpected find, and it can completely derail the whole trip, which is a good thing.
Well, there are a couple things about that, right? I mean, one would make it more enjoyable and fun, because then you truly have the treasure hunt and you found the treasure, right? Because that's part of it, right? Otherwise, it could become a job. And second, I mean, to me, the discipline of what you're doing allows for that. I guess I want to say it that way, is that you build that flexibility in knowing that, hey, this is the plan until.
Right.
To me, that makes it attractive too. I think that's pretty neat. So when do you decide to rent a vehicle as opposed to drive your own? Now, you were driving a little white travel, you know, van, right? Or I don't know what to call them, a Sprinter kind of thing, right?
We have one of the smaller Ford Transit connected.
Transit, yep. Okay. And when do you decide to drive your own or rent one?
Well, this last trip, this is a great example. We had been having great luck at the Sam's Club warehouse stores here in the Kansas City area. And we'd go into a Sam's Club, and we'd, you know, come close to filling up the van with, you know, the discounted products we were finding, or even kind of the products that were off other people's radar. And we're like, wow, if we could hit the road, we've hit all the Kansas City stores. But if we hit the road with our small van, we're going to be able to get to two or three stores before we're stopped up and have to ship in. So the plan was to rent the big cargo van and head out on the road. But here's the kicker. The Sam's Clubs we went to, the first 10, there was nothing in them, whether there was another seller that got to them or what it was. So the whole trip was at risk of being derailed even after renting this big van.
So do you get discouraged? I mean, so I want to get into the mind, right? Because, you know, I'm a goal-oriented person, and I'm an accountant with an MBA, so we've got a lot of similarities, right? So I would get discouraged because I would feel like my plan, and I'm this evil genius, failed.
Right.
How do you get past that, or is that, again, where Ivy comes in and she's positive, keeps you on focus? Or is it, petting the dog? Or are you kicking the dog? What's going on there?
No.
What do you get? How do you get past that?
You know, it's just, I used to be scared about it. I used to be scared we're going to go out on the road and we're not going to find anything. But I just knew. And we ended up just going into into Walgreens, and it was getting just after Thanksgiving, so there were certain items that were having that those Q4 spikes were already happening. So we ended up turning what was going to be a Sam's Club trip into, you know, a Walgreens and a Walmart trip. Hmm. And we just found the products that matched what we wanted to do, and we made it work.
Do you feel like you've developed a sixth sense? I mean, where you can just, that doesn't look normal, right? Especially, I guess, especially Walgreens is a great example, right? The store layouts are generally the same, generally. And so you go in and you see exactly the same thing, and then all of a sudden you see something and you're like, whoa, that wasn't there in the last place. What's that?
Definitely. It's and that came with experience, of course. Whether it's, you know, Walgreens, Walmart, any of the big chains, that you get a feeling when you go into them, like, this store, this one hasn't been sourced. You know, there's good stuff here. And when you find one good product, then you really start looking around. You're like, well, if this hasn't been sourced, then I'll bet you this other product that I used to buy 6 months ago in my hometown, it's probably still there too. And usually it is.
Well, and that's a good point. So hey, here's my mental, all right, because I'm that anal retentive accountant. You plan how many minutes per store, right? I guarantee you have a plan. Nope, 22 minutes per store. We're going to hit that, right? I'm sure you do that. And then what happens when that changes? Do you hunker down and realize we're going to be here for a while? Is that how it goes? That's so cool.
Definitely. We both get the feeling like, oh, this is it. Or you scan a product. My favorite example, like Ivy will scan, it was when we were in Hawaii last time, and we're just kind of wasting time in this Walgreens, and she scanned a hemorrhoid ointment, Tux ointment. Ooh. And there was just one of them. It's something I've seen on the shelves 1,000 times, but Ivy scanned this ointment, and it was $6, and it was selling for $40. and right then and there, I knew, bam. This is our next big product. And it was just off one scan, and it's something I would have missed, but Ivy nailed it. And right then and there. So then what do you do next? How else can I find this product? And, you know, you check the other stores where we were. I called my employees back in Kansas City and said, all right, guys, this is the plan. Start rounding up the Tux. So it was all based on that one scan that Ivy had, that if she doesn't do it that day, who knows when we find that product, if we even find it. But I knew, and we had the experience, and we've been through that, you know, 10, 12 times before of knowing when that home run product is coming around.
And so you've got a big advantage, right, because you have two employees back in Kansas City for you. So you can send them out in different directions, and you have figured out the logistical side of all that. Plus what you guys are doing. So are you shipping from the road, and along with them, they're shipping from your home base?
That's right. We can we kind of double dip in that regard right now.
So that's a real scalable operation. You know, here you are, right? You're that anal retentive accountant who's a control freak like me, right? You've been taught, hey, got to put controls in place, got to make sure everybody didn't steal, all the things that you've been taught your whole life, your career, you've been groomed for that. Then you now add another person to the mix outside of your wife, who knows what kind of person you are and how particular you are, and maybe she's particular too. Now you're adding a third party you have no control over, especially when you're down in the South and they're up there. How do you make that transition?
That transition was really hard for us because, as you know, first time entrepreneurs, it felt good to be doing it all myself at first, or ourselves, me and Ivy. We took pride in the fact that, hey, we peeled every clearance label, we stuck every item in the box and filled them all up and shipped them to FBA. But when it comes down to it, you know, that wasn't the best use of my time. My strength is finding the product, the next big product, and gathering as many as we can and making money.
All right. Well, I don't want to lose that point. What makes you so good at that?
Oh, man.
Oh, it's a big deal, because I think it's a valid point, and I think I have a couple ideas of why you've been groomed that way. But go ahead. Give me what you think.
I know that, you know, one of my biggest strengths is my ability to analyze a market, and that comes from my education from the accounting, and I can, you know, generally when I see having the experience now, like I said, when I go back to Ivy scanned a product, and you can almost tell by the number of sellers, the rank, the fact that Amazon's not selling it anymore, that bang, we got a winner there.
Well, you recognize value, and I would say that that's a real skill set you have. You, and maybe that is your education or whatever, but it just seems to me you have that ability to recognize, there's value there. You know, the cost, maybe you can do the cost in your mind. I don't know if it's an unnatural act on your part that you just see it. To me, that's a skill set, and I could tell just by watching you over the last couple of years, I could see that you have that.
But I think it's not something that was innate to us. It took a lot of, you know, I've been in what the advice to newbie sellers is go into the store and scan 100 items. And right now, like, that bores me. But I've been there. I've been into the store. I've been into the CVS, and you scan the clearance or the Walmart, and you know, you gotta the kiss a lot of toads before you find the prince, whatever. There's a lot of bad stuff out there, but the more times we did that, see, now, you know, I agree. I've got the ability that, you know, I can walk into a store and look at the clearance section and generally eyeball what's out of place or we've had luck with that brand before discontinuing a certain variation of their product. Maybe this one's discontinued too. Let's go do some research on that.
And there's no shortcuts. I mean, you've got to, as you say, you know, you've got to kiss all those frogs. You've really got to work your way through that and learn it. Nobody can teach you that. And we're going to talk about the list, which is you're part owner of. But that is not a shortcut. I mean, it is and it isn't. Buying from the list or any of the other services does not teach you how to find value. It shows you things that are selling that are arbitrageable,
right?
But that doesn't teach you that skill set. You still have to go out and learn that skill set, because even not everything on the list sells as fast as you would like it to, right? I'm sure, just like anything else. And so there are things that you might buy from the list or somebody else might buy and I might not, you know. And I think there's got to be that – you have to – you know, is it a sharpening? Maybe is a better way to say it. You know, is it really, it just sharpens every time you do something, it gets a little sharper. One more little, you know, I think of a knife or something, get a little bit sharper over time.
Right. I would agree with that. And I think you mentioned earlier that, you know, one thing, if someone, an outside observer were to come in and look at my sales last year and my sales in 2014 and my sales in 2015,
They went down,
and people would say, "Hey, your business is deteriorating. You're not growing. Shouldn't businesses always be growing?
If you're not growing, you're dying, right? Isn't that the phrase?
That's what they say, right? But you know, most of that is, you know, we've made a decision that, you know, I used to go to a store, whether it be a liquidation place or a Walmart. If I can make $5 on a product, I'm gonna buy it." And I want to make that $5. I don't want to leave that $5 on the shelf. But you end up stretching yourself pretty thin. And you're spending a lot of time, whether it's my time or my employees' time, prepping individual $5 profit items that, you know, maybe if we spend our time like we did more so in the last year in smarter sourcing and sourcing larger numbers of more profitable products, then our sales did go down in 2015, though our profit margins and average selling price went way up.
Yeah, and that's the smart move right there. I describe this to some people who are starting out. It's like you don't find what to buy as much as you find what not to buy.
That's right. That's right.
And you know, because, I mean, I think everything sells. Doesn't mean you're going to make money at it, but I think everything has a price to sell. But you learn what not to buy, and I think that is the sharpening that happens over time. Have, you know, you're a different person than your wife, right? Has she brought, has her perspective, and you gave a good example where she did the hemorrhoid cream, is a woman's perspective a big advantage for a man? You know, I mean, as couples, right? Because I'm sure she must look at things differently than you.
Well, I think it's huge. It's perspective in different categories, different products to buy, like whether it be something really easy to think about. Like, Ivy's going to know more about women's shoes and cosmetics than I do. But it's also in dealing with, you know, part of what we do going into 30 stores a day is we're dealing with 30 different cashiers, 30 different store managers, and thousands of different customers. So I think it helps us to keep we've got a good, what do you want to say, a look about us that we're just a happy couple that goes in. And I think people are more willing to give us the benefit of the doubt when we're asking for, do you have any more of these in the back, you know, rather than just some, if it was just me and there's some shaggy seller guy by himself. But having, it looks like we're and it's true, we're a married couple looking for, they're more willing to please a couple, or probably if Ivy was by herself, a woman.
Right. No, I get it. And do you, what do you tell people when they ask you, hey, what are you going to do with these?
Oh boy. We've got a whole,
you've stretched the truth a few times, don't you?
I hate to lie to people, but it's often a little easier to lie than it is to,
give us a couple of your tried and trues, that ones that just seem to roll right off.
Well, I will say one lucky one is I still have my Hawaii driver's license. So when someone is asking me, why are you buying all this stuff? It's real easy to say, well, we don't have this back in Hawaii, so we're really stocking up now. So it's come in really handy. Having that still.
That's a good one. I export to Canada and to Europe is a good one I always use, because, and that's true, where they say, are these going to be gifts? Well, yes. As a matter of fact, they will be.
For somebody.
That's true. That's right. Well, you didn't ask for who or that I'm giving, right? So that's true too.
Sure.
So it's funny, you know, people always, the other one I always, I think is funny, when you are clearing the shelf, somebody, no matter what store I'm in, will run over and say, is that a deal?
Oh, yeah.
They want to get in on it. It's like, would you like one? Go ahead.
It's human nature not to want to be missing out on something. So we do the same as you. If someone really needs to have something, you hand them one. There's no reason to be confrontational in a store.
There's so many places to buy. I'm past that point in my life too. It's just like, sure, whatever you need, you know. And or that little kid who wants one is like, of course, sure. You know, you pick the one you
sure,
want.
Sure, sure.
So what's next for you guys? I mean, what do you, you know, what's your plan going forward? Do you see your sales sharpening even more as you continue to adjust what you don't want to buy?
You know, I've been asked that recently. Everyone always says, all right, you're pretty good at retail arbitrage. You're pretty good at online arbitrage. Don't you want to do private label? Don't you want to stop running around and get wholesale accounts? But I don't, you know. We found something that we love and something that, to be honest, we're really good at, and we make a lot of money. So I don't want anything to change, Steve. I want to keep.
No, I get it. I get it. You are one of the rare couples that love it. And equally love it. I mean, you know, there are other couples that are out there that are very successful, but they get tired of it. You know, it doesn't sound like this has become a job for you, like the accounting job.
No.
Is that fair?
That's fair. You mentioned treasure hunt in a previous question, and I still get that rush when I go into a store and I see that product that we haven't seen in 6 months, and I know it's quadrupled in price. I still get, my heart flutters a little. It still does to this day. And I could be picking up the first one of the day, or I could be at the fifth store of the day finding the same product. And that's something that my professional accounting job, I never really had that. I might have saved the company a few bucks here or there, paid the bills on time, but there was never any true ownership of, because when I see that product and I know I'm going to sell it for $100, I know that's coming into my bank account to help my family.
The only time I ever got that excited is when you found a fraud and you're like, ah, I got it.
Yeah.
And it was always that big thrill.
Right.
And it's awful to think about that. But, you know, so that grounding, though, you know, I want a perspective again. You know, I mean, I think that, you know, you guys are truly a loving couple who get it. You don't seem like you're into a lot of lavish things, and you both like that kind of nomad, you know, kind of lifestyle. You don't have kids.
That's right.
So that helps, right? I'm sure that's a big deal.
That's a huge advantage to our business.
You think you will have kids someday, and how will that affect your business?
You know, we're still in our early 30s, so you know, a lot. It's our time. It's the time that many of our friends do, and it's something, you know, we've both considered. It's still up in the air, and okay. It would hugely affect our business. And I have great respect for those that can keep, whether it be a part-time or a full-time selling business, that have a house full of kids. It would be a challenge, to say the least.
That's, to me, where the balance comes in, because that's, to me, where I can see balance being a real challenge. So I agree with you there. All right, that is awesome. So I love it. I think the biggest takeaway for me is that your wife really helps you keep, you know, that not working all the time, saying, hey, we got to stay healthy. Hey, we got to still do things. So you're getting to see a lot of the country. Are you taking advantage of when you do go to an area to make sure that you see things? Like you mentioned Disney, you were able to go to the parks a couple of days. Do you make it a point that when you're traveling to Omaha to go see the giant potato or corn head, whatever it is, I don't know what Omaha's known for other than insurance and Warren Buffett.
Right. Yeah, we definitely try to at least put a little, like, we're up in Green Bay, so it's like, you know, we got to go see Lambeau Field, right?
You got to get cheese, and you got to get a cheese head on your head somewhere, right?
Eating our cheese curds, driving down the road. I mean, living the stereotypical Wisconsin life, so we try to, and it's awesome. I love that we're able to do it.
Now, do you stay in, my final question for your road trip, do you stay in a bed in a Bible place, or have you gotten to the point where you guys have some minimums that say, nah, I want at least this?
I will say that's probably with Ivy with me. She's got standards, much more than I do. And
you know, so she's classing you up.
Definitely.
All right, good.
So
that's a good thing.
Hampton Inns of the world.
Okay, so you've been racking up the points, right? So you're one of their million-mile people.
That's right.
That's awesome. So because you're not busy enough, you and a bunch of other bearded guys decide to start a sourcing service, and you contribute. It's not just a sourcing service where you use VAs, and there's nothing wrong with that. I don't want to put a negative spin on any of this. You guys have a sourcing service that you personally contribute X number of those items a week, personally.
That's right.
And that's the difference, which is a lot of the list, and I'll have a link for it. But that's a difference about you guys, is you guys personally, you know, I've been with Chris Bond. He's like, Steve, I got to go get my other item. I got to put one in. I got to get one in right now. And he's right up to the last minute, but he takes it serious.
Oh, yeah.
As do you. And so how did that evolve, and what's been your experience with it?
I was, you know, the lead admin of the list is Curtis Batdorf, and him and Andy approached me. It's been honestly a year now. We've just celebrated our year anniversary of providing this service, and they said, "Hey, we're going to come up with this idea. We're going to share finds with a limited number, 100 customers, and we want you to join." And you know, that was kind of outside of my comfort zone. You know, a lot of my finds were in-store finds, and it's stuff that, you know, it might be a little, I don't know if I want to share it with 100 people. But luckily I had been kind of dabbling with online arbitrage, and I'd surrounded myself with some smart people like Curtis and Peter Molius that are really great at finding online deals, and some of that rubbed off on me. And just about when they asked me to join the list is when kind of my online skills were honing. And I said, sure, I'd like to do that. It sounds like a great opportunity to help others. And you know, it's another piece of income for myself as well.
Well, and I think, you know, as I sit and think about it, it has to keep you sharp. You know, thinking about, I was in Chicago with Chris, and he's like, Steve, I got to go do this. I was just sitting there lounging. He had to get up and go and physically do it. He was sharper than I was at that moment, because he has an obligation, and it just keeps him in the game a lot more focused, I guess, right?
Oh, definitely a huge benefit is it kind of that something I have to do every day. I have to put on 2 to 3 good deals that are worthy of showing to 100 people. And it's one thing that sets us apart, I think, on the list, is that when I post that deal, everyone knows that this is David Hawkins' deal. This is a deal that David, usually I do personally buy the same deals I put on there. But if my deal was skunky, if it was no good, I'm going to hear about it. And people are going to know to avoid my deals, and I'll probably be asked to not be an admin anymore. So there's
right,
there's
and they pressure. Will call you out.
It will.
They will call you out.
And that's great.
So you guys have created the Online Sellers Academy, and that is a free group. You do have to request to be. They want to make sure you want to make sure they're real,
sure.
And that's the best place to find out more information about the list if somebody's interested.
Yes,
because it's not cheap, right? It's not cheap. Yeah. I mean, you guys want to get paid for your service. You're performing a service, and you're not afraid to charge for it. But you also, in this group, I see tons of information that costs nobody anything, right?
That's right.
You guys freely give, and people are allowed to ask questions there and that kind of thing.
That's right. It's a great place to kind of – and you kind of get to know me. You get to know Curtis. You get to know Randy. You get to know Chris. That we're all different people, and that's what's so great, I think, about the list as well, is that you're getting to borrow all four of our brains twice a day, each of us.
And you come at it from different perspectives, and I'm sure your specialty is different than Randy's. I know it is for a fact.
That's right.
And different than Curtis's and different than Chris's. I love it. Okay. So, you know, the goal of this podcast is to help people move forward, right, and try to get past that point of stuck. I always say that 20 to 30,000 on Amazon is relatively easy to do, you know, but it's not a living.
Right.
You know, you're really not making a living. To get past that point, though, a lot of people get stuck. They just can't step up. Give us a tip or trick that you think that somebody could go out and put into their business and help them move forward.
I would definitely say one thing I wish I'd have done earlier, and we briefly talked about it, was an employee. And it may be not even a formalized employee, but somebody else that you can trust to send out to a store to gather more of whatever it is for you. For example, Ivy and I were, like I said, we were in Florida between Thanksgiving and Christmas, and the hot product this year, you may know, Steve, was the Star Shower.
Oh yeah, it was everywhere.
It was everywhere, right? And it was in every store Ivy and I were in until it wasn't, until it became big, and uh-huh. Overnight there was not one to find in all of Florida. But you know, I was able to call my employees in Kansas City. And they're a little bit behind in Kansas City than people are over on the coast. And they were still plentiful in the stores in Kansas City. So having employees here, maybe if I didn't have an employee, maybe if I was just calling my brother or my father-in-law and say, hey, can you go pick up some of these? You know, having that extra body in a different location ended up making us a huge amount of money in Q4 that we wouldn't have got because we were already somewhere else without that product. Mm-hmm.
That's a great example. And, you know, and it can even be a prep company. You know, anything you can do to help bring on or take, you know, as who just said it? I loved it. Harvey Specter said he wanted to buy time, right? Because that bought you time, right? Because what would you have done? Raced back to Kansas City to try to do that. And it just wouldn't have worked.
Exactly.
So that's great advice, really great advice. All right, best way to get in touch with you. And I have a link for the list, the Online Sellers Academy, and that's where you can find out all the information about the list. You're out there on Facebook land. Are you open to taking a question here and there, Dave?
Oh, sure. I love hearing from people, and I try to force it, not force, but get to some questions every now and then, because I know there's a lot of sellers out there and lots of questions, and people love to hear about our traveling exploits. Hey, how do you ship from a hotel room? Or so, you know, people can send me a note, and I'll try to do my best to help you out.
Okay, I'll have the links there. Man, I appreciate you taking the time. I wish you and Ivy nothing but the best. And the dog's name again was, how complicated?
Mary Carroll.
Mary Carroll. And I know there's got to be a story, which I can't wait, because I'll see you in a couple months down at the ScanPower conference. I want to hear the story about how the naming of the dog happened.
Sounds
so, man, I just wish you nothing but success, a continued success for you and your family. So best wishes, David.
Oh, thank you, Steve.
Thank you. Good night. Okay, another great interview with another list member. That's our fourth list member. There's one left. He's avoiding me, but he's not for long. Just kidding. Can't wait to get that one done. But I hope you enjoy these as much as I do. I just love talking to these successful sellers And the fact that they're just so generous with their time, I am so fortunate. I hope that you realize that you are too, that, you know, these people truly do care, and you can hear it in their voice. And I haven't met a bragging one yet. They're just so kind of humble, and which is just so cool to see. So, you know, check us out, ecommercemomentum.com. You know, sign up there and just stay up on what we're doing. Got another great interview coming up next. Pretty big eBay seller, which is really an interesting twist. I haven't had a really big eBay seller, but man, this guy is great. So thanks for listening. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.